trying to get Bob making the money in the woods, and they can't do that anymore. You're going to have more training, more education. The demand is there, and the people are trying, their legislators, to do something about it, and so we are.
The state made a phenomenal decision, I think, in this last legislative session. They really stepped up and said, yes, we want to go in this direction.
One of the legislative measures, one of the legislative statutes, was to increase funding to the Oregon University system so that we could start producing, that were more engineers of a caliber that the high-tech companies in Oregon can use.
Not only do we want to have an adequately funded university system, but we want a double number of engineers, we want a top-tier school of engineering, we want a top school of bioscience, and we want to make that transfer happen effectively in the state.
The fact that the legislature has said, we're going to change this issue of equity positions for universities, we'll put it on the ballot, let the people understand what the issue is, we're going to make that change.
OSTDA has recently been reauthorized by the legislature, refunded specifically to address commercializing inventions and discoveries coming out of the academic and research sector.
And when it comes to the high-tech area, money flows to where you find the highly educated people and the bandwidth.
Oregon has just miles and miles and miles of fiber optic, huge fiber optic.
Just as, you know, the roads and electrification has been in the past, I believe access to the internet is at that level. And I think it's critical that that happen. And you're seeing those kinds of investments throughout the state.
You know, the 2001 session for us will be sort of known as the ground zero session, where, you know, people started to have an understanding of the new economy, the impacts.
Creating this ecosystem of innovation is very, very hard.
I lined up in the governor said, the work starts now. And that is very true.
We still need to get the constitutional amendment passed.
We need to make sure that we have financial structure in making the connections. Yes, we have to have, you know, the lawyers, the infrastructure here that understand new age economy companies and all of those structures.
Create a facility that we hope will attract businesses in the biosciences.
We also need to get more money for higher education tech transfer.
How do you build all that together? And that's really what we have to decide to do.
My dream for all of this is that we are sort of a seamless system in Oregon where everybody's working together toward a goal, which is educated citizenry and an economy that's healthy.
I'm beginning to see Oregonians across this entire state mean to say, yes, we want it, yes, we believe we can get it, and yes, we know the steps to get it.
We are changing the Oregon economy and the Oregon way of doing business so that it's a good place to invest in, it's a good place to have a company, it's a good place to grow your company, and it's a good place to have it to raise your kids.
Business community is working with the university, is working with the legislature, is working with the abilities of our community leaders. And so I'm very optimistic because I think for the first time we have all the partners now who understand what needs to be done and they're willing to work together.
If all of this works, and I think it will, I think that's what we're gaining. We are getting an increased quality of life here in Oregon.
If we end up with a vibrant Oregon economy, we will have succeeded.
We got heat, right? We got fuel, we got spark, maybe we'll get fire.
Warm. Go ahead.
Did all those people on the tape sign up to testify?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Let's talk business.
Okay. What I'd like to do is reinforce a couple of things here. One is that the world economy has changed. Information and technology is the foundation for all future growth in all businesses. There's a quote here I'd like to read from Michael Porter, who is a Harvard Business School professor. Today, there's no such thing as a low-tech industry. There are only low-tech companies. That is, companies that fail to use world-class technology and practices to enhance productivity and innovation. So no matter what industry you're in, whether it is paper, forest products, agriculture, or high tech, you need to be investing in your information and technology systems. Because if you aren't, your competitor is. So for Oregon to remain competitive, for all of Oregon to remain competitive, we have to be investing in our people. We need highly educated workforce. Now, Senator Ducker mentioned Gordon Moore, and he mentioned one of his laws. I'd actually like to fill a little more around those. There's really three laws that we go by, and I believe that they're applicable to every industry. The first is that every recession ends. Very important. Second is, you cannot simply cut your way through a recession. You have to cut and invest. And the reason you have to invest is for number three. Market share shifts occur on the upswing. And in our economy, our market share is all about jobs. We are in a recession. We are losing jobs. Those jobs will return. The question is, will they return to Oregon or someplace else? And that's what we need to be looking at. So Oregon's economy has changed. I passed around here a little table that was put out by our Office of Economic Analysis that just contrasts Oregon's economy 1989 to 1990. And if you look at it, you'll see there's been a tremendous shift in the makeup of our economy. Oregon's economy is now dominated by high tech, 22%, where 10 years ago it was 3%. What that means is Oregon's economy is transitioning into the information age. The challenge we have in front of us is that Oregon's economy has changed, but our state policies have not changed to reflect that. So we were given an assignment here. Be specific. Help grow the economy. Stimulate, create new jobs. What is it we have to do? I actually think there's just a very simple two-prong approach that you need to take at looking at this. First is, we need to keep the jobs that we have. I would strongly suggest that we go out, and whether it's the Economic Development Department or I don't know who the right people are, talk to the top employers in this state and say to them, what do we have to do to make doing business in Oregon easier? We've just heard, at least in the Portland metropolitan area, about some major reductions in transportation, in semiconductor. We should be going into those companies and understanding why they made the decisions they made. And is there anything we could be doing about that? All of these companies are global companies. All of them have many options about where to move jobs. Let's take, for example, a semiconductor company. They'll have plants here in Oregon. They'll have plants in three or four other states. They'll have plants in other countries. Right now, they're cutting back. But at the same time they're cutting back, they're planning on where they're going to grow when the recovery occurs. Remember law one, it will end. And remember law two is that we're investing. So they're deciding now, where are the plants that we're going to be investing our future in? We want to make sure that they've decided to do that here in Oregon and not in Arizona, not in Texas, not in Colorado, not in Florida. Believe me, we have competitors. And when these businesses are looking to make these investments, they are looking at how hard it is to do business here. Now, I've heard a couple of you already reference that some of the rules we have in this state are quite daunting. And again, if we want these high-paying jobs, we need to make sure that we're focused on making sure that these companies can do business and want to do business here. Another example in this area of trying to understand about doing business in this state is Applied Materials recently announced that they're moving to Oregon. This is fantastic news. Well, if you dig a little deeper, it could have been even better. It turns out that they want to be in the heart of Oregon's semiconductor valley, so they want to be in Hillsboro. They want to be next to their largest supplier, happens to be Intel. So they were very specific about where they wanted to be. Now, where else were they looking? It wasn't the competition wasn't between Hillsboro and Portland or Hillsboro and someplace else in Oregon. The competition was it be next to Intel in Hillsboro, next to Intel in Arizona, next to Intel in New Mexico? because that's what they wanted to do. Now, the site they found was one-third the size they wanted. And it turns out the site that they have happens to be right on an urban growth boundary. And so as the president of the company is standing there looking, saying, we want two-thirds more land, he's looking as far as the eye can see at open land, and he's basically being told, you can't have it. So in this time when we are losing jobs, losing a lot of jobs in the state, we said to a company that wanted to move here and create jobs that aren't just jobs, but those high-paying jobs, those jobs that are paying 2 to 3 times what the average Oregonian is making, we said to that company, we don't want all those jobs because we've decided we only want a third of them. I consider that a priority that's in the misplaced. So what are those things? So I would strongly suggest, again, taking a business approach, I would go out, visit my customers. I'd come back with a list of the top 10, 20, 30, you pick it, items that need to be corrected in order for us to send a very strong signal to business that says, we want you in our state. And believe me, right now, we are sending signals that are just the opposite of that. We are sending signals that says, oh, come to our state, but you have to live by our rules. And if you don't like it, tough luck. Well, right now we have competitors, and I think it's a signal that we need to change. I think there are quite a few things that can be done here. But again, go get the data. Go talk to the customers. Come up with your lists. The second thing in this simple strategy of, again, the first one is keep the jobs we have and position ourselves for recovery, is to grow new companies. In the 21st century, the way you are going to diversify is by creating jobs, by creating new companies. You create companies by having an extremely well-educated workforce and by having great research. We in Oregon, I believe, one of the reasons we are suffering disproportionately is that we have been disinvesting in our university system over the last 20 years. Because of that, we have not been creating the companies that have been created in a lot of other places. Where are the $50 million, $100 million, and $200 million companies that would have been created over the last 20 years? Well, they're in Seattle, they're in California, they're in Austin. They're not here. We're paying the price. Unfortunately, the price we pay is a silent price. It wasn't created here, as opposed to Freightliner, as an example, that shut down a major division. We feel that. And so it's critical that we invest in research to cause this to happen. Another comment here is the biosciences are an extremely important future. The biosciences are going to be, in 20 years, in my personal opinion, as important, if not more important, than high tech is today. And the biosciences affect all of us. This isn't just about humans. Biosciences have a huge impact on the farm, in the field, and in the stream. And so whether you're in agriculture, forest products, or environmental remediation, I have a hard time with that word, correction, the biosciences are going to play a huge and important role when many new companies are going to be formed. And it's critical that we put energy in developing that for all of Oregon. And just one more note. The statewide services play an extremely important role in this. They play a role because they're a kind of the engineer. You can say they're the ones that take the research and put it in the field. They take it out of the lab and into the field. And so as we look at developing our economy across this entire state, I think it's critical that we not only invest in our higher education system, but we continue to invest in our statewide services, because again, that's what helps all of the small independent farmers and ag people out there that don't have the resources for that research to be able to supply in that. So what I would like to do now is transition and have Skip talk about the importance of excellence and why excellence is what will drive new innovation and new companies.
Good morning, Co-Chairs Mesker and Atkinson and members of the committee. I'd simply like to underscore the importance of some things that Jim mentioned, which is the importance of new business and new ideas. just as the state is seeing maturing of some businesses, over-dependence on some economic sectors that are in trouble, businesses themselves, large companies, realize that the large successes that are yesterday's and today's aren't going to be the large successes of tomorrow. So economic diversification is critical for them, just as it is for the state of Oregon. And so that is why we need to concentrate not merely on the quality and quantity of graduates that our university systems produces, but the quality of research, the quality of faculty, and the attractiveness to entrepreneurial companies of the communities that they provide. There are two opportunities that come about as a result. One is where existing companies work with new ideas and with universities, as companies like Intel and Hewlett-Packard are doing today, both for new products of their own and also to participate in new spin-offs, new companies that didn't prior exist previously. Examples of that are Intel Capital. Hewlett-Packard has an extensive new business creation program, and although it's out of state, I noticed recently that Nokia announced a $38 million entrepreneurs fund for companies to be started by its own employees. The point being that these companies see that the key to growth and future opportunity is new business, new products that are possibly very different from what existed before, and you're at great risk if you don't have an environment that can produce those opportunities. The other opportunity, of course, is starting new companies fresh directly from the university. And it's well known that the milieu required for that to happen are great people and ideas, like Jim said on the video, critical mass and infrastructure of all kinds of services for that industry, and then access to capital. The implications for Oregon's investment in higher education are a couple. It's very important that we have stable and significant investments in top-tier engineering and bioscience research universities. These are required to be attractive to top faculty to come to Oregon, for top students to select these institutions, and by extension, entrepreneurial new businesses to be started up around these institutions. And they are our future jobs. Other states, as you have heard, see this opportunity as well. And we also all know that investment in higher ed is not yet a comparative advantage for our state. We did gain momentum and widespread public support during the last legislative session, and it would be a great shame to lose this momentum. It would be an even greater shame to lose the next wave of breakthrough opportunities that is just beginning to other states and regions. You've asked us to recommend specific actions, and so I'm simply going to recommend one, and that is to get serious about a top-tier college of engineering. This should not be the first thing of the investment that is considered to be dropped when times get tough. So that's the message, a top-tier college of engineering.
I'm just going to, Jason asked for some just sort of suggestions, and so that's literally what I'm going to give you. I'm going to reel off a few here, and then we'll get off stage here and let somebody else speak. I've been at this a long time, and many of you have sat up there, and I've talked before, but I think back the times when I was a sophomore at Willamette University. I was interning at U.S. Bank, and it was the early 80s, 81 and 83, and I remember John Aluyarog and Doug Strain and several other community leaders sort of stepping up and saying, we need to figure out where the Oregon economy needs to go, and literally because of some of the wise decisions they made during that time period, we've been able to sort of achieve the financial success. I have been fairly vocal that we have not been doing an adequate job with economic development, and I think we got a great package through last session, but I think literally where I would start is how are we doing economic development. There's several efforts going underway now. I think you've got the study that Senator Yee sort of pushed forward. I think the department itself is sort of going through an internal review, but I think literally now is the time to really sort of bring real focus into that. And the two messages I made during session is that, one, you need to bring the private sector back into that department, and you need to bring the economic development piece back in. Quite frankly, it's become more of a community development agency. The lottery bonds, which are important, dredging the Columbia is important, but somehow going out and doing industrial recruitment, particularly in the area of bioscience and whatnot, is very, very important, and we need to sort of relook at that.
I would also go as far to say, and this is not short-term for special session, but I think there's other states that have privatized their economic development function, and I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but I think to look at that option in conjunction with the private sector would be a worthwhile venture of both sides of the aisle and the private sector to look at. Tactically, I think Jim said it on the video, is we need to figure out how to build this ecosystem of innovation in the state. I am a very strong proponent of sort of top tier, and we're not talking about very much money there. We're talking about a $5 million commitment. But even more important, and it's the point that John Castles makes, is that I think, again, not looking to special session, but next session, I think fundamentally we need to look if we have the state system governed in the right kind of way. I'm talking with Duncan Wise about this last session. You guys passed 2015, which takes a look at the entire governance system, the state system. I remember a conversation in which I had Kate, Senator Brown, Senator Atkinson, Senator Nelson, Representative Starr, Senator Beyer, upstairs in a room with Jim, and we were talking about what is the plan for engineering education in the Portland metro area. And I can tell you, Oregon State has a plan to have a presence up there. PSU, we approved a new $60 million engineering school. I've talked to some folks that are working with Paul Allen that want to do something over the Coliseum. We don't have a plan for up there, and I think literally one of the things, I'm not sure if you merge institutions or you do something with OGI or PSU, you need to figure out what the vision is up there, and you need to sort of reconcile what we're doing with Tier 1 and what happens in the Portland metro area. And I've been at this a long time, and I believe that what Paul Risser and Ron Adams have done down in Oregon State is very, very important to getting us to Tier 1. I'm not sort of, in terms of what Dan Bernstein has done at PSU, we've got solid undergraduate engineering education up there, but I think we need to get down on the details, and you guys need to understand what the plan is. And I think it's really the business community working with the legislature, working with the philanthropic community in terms of what we're doing. And there's been significant progress. I think there's been over $55 million raised at Oregon State towards the Tier 1 program. On the Oregon Health Sciences, they've raised over $100 million. And so there's private sector dollars being committed here, and we need to have state policies that sort of continue that investment. On the biotech side, I would really encourage you that we need to look at that closely. One thing that's different about that is we don't have existing biotech industries here. You have a great Oregon Health Sciences University, but you've got great schools down at University of Oregon and Oregon State that also focus on the biosciences. Someone has suggested that we actually create a biosciences ETIC fund, very similar to what we've done for engineering. Again, this is not the time to be making new proposals, but again, if we're trying to bring focused dollars to accomplish something, one of my personal goals, and I've shared this with some of you, is to create an Oregon Research Valley that would go from Oregon Health Sciences to Oregon State to University of Oregon down to OIT, and you get those doing, and there's an understanding that we need to sort of also reach out to rural Oregon and over the coast. And Senator Messersley, I look at you, just so you know that I don't forget our conversations, is that Senator Messersley has one of the biggest internet pipes coming through Coos Bay, but probably they're the least connected of any part of the state. And I'll tell you, I was down at an Oregon Economic Development Committee meeting, and there was a county commissioner down there from Curry County basically talking to the commission, and she says, I don't know how to go about this. I don't know how to do that somehow. I'm not sure why that's, we're not getting through. I think we've learned a lot about 622 and what we're doing there, but I think I also had a conversation with Jeff Adderkirk from Tillamook, and again, same kind of concerns, but I think there's some things that you can do down there. So I'm sort of, trying to reach some high points here, but I think there's a lot that can be done. There's ideas beyond what the guys at this table can do if you really sort of figure out to sort of set the platform up, which we can have this discussion. I'm hopeful in the spring, we've been talking actually with some folks at Applied Materials and with Duncan Wise at Oregon Business Council. Initially, it started as a concept to do something that we would call Oregon 360. It may take a different shape and form, but it's really to take legislators and key members of the Oregon business community and go around the state and maybe about 5 public forums and really sort of get to the heart of some of these issues in a little bit more detailed fashion. So literally we build some consensus as we come back here in 2003 and do this. The one other comment I make, and I want to stress the statewide aspects of this, but I particularly look Senator Deckard and Senator Metzger and Senator Gordley here, particularly around the metro area. I was born on the corner of 6th and Main in Hillsborough, and my granddad was a dairy farmer in that community. I grew up about 5 city blocks from what was a strawberry field where Hawthorne Farms now sits. I actually grew up about a block from Senator Starr, and literally I've ventured into the area of local politics on some of this stuff, and in a lot of respects, the greater Portland metro area drives this economic engine. If you look at where the high tech is, there's about 13% in Multnomah County, there's 50% in Washington County. I don't think there's a regional vision about what we're doing. I think City of Portland is really hurting from lack of jobs sort of moving out of the central city. And I think there's some proposals to sort of do some things there. I think Washington County has some property out there, but I was surprised, and I'm saying this in a public forum because I wanted to change. The mayor of Hillsborough has never sat down and had a personal conversation with the mayor of Portland. And to me, that needs to change. We need to start functioning as a region up there, and we need to show some leadership. And you guys have leadership up there, so I want to encourage you guys to help make that happen. So with that, I would just really like to extend my appreciation, Jason, for Senator Atkinson and Senator Metzger for allowing us to sort of be here today and just tell you we're here to help and we're here for the long term.
Questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ridgeley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you've made a great case, all of you, for the need for the infrastructure of education and the science to coordinate to pull industry and new businesses to Oregon. But I heard you say, Mr. Johnson, the burden, I think, or the unfriendliness of Oregon to businesses or businesses coming to Oregon. Could you be more specific of what you were talking about there and maybe some ideas of what we as this committee could do to try to change some of that?
Well, I think that the challenge here, again, instead of talking to them about a couple of specifics, which I'm happy to share. The goal here is, again, in industry, we do benchmarking. So let's go out and talk to, 30 or 40 companies that have had these experiences and understand them. And maybe in one particular incident, that caused an issue, and if that's a global issue or not, I don't know. Oregon is a great place. And, we talk a lot about quality of life. And I know for most of us, quality of life, in my mind, is when I have a good job. And without a good job, I can't do anything. So the question is, do we have an environment that encourages the creation of jobs? And, in Oregon, permitting and creating buildings is a very difficult and challenging task. It can take, 2 years to get something built. What one person considers a ditch, another person considers a wetland. And those things have huge impacts on how do we develop things. And so what's important to a semiconductor industry may be very different than what's important to, an agriculture industry. So I would rather take the time to really go through and get the right people, interview them and get the top lists of issues that need to get solved. That way we can look at the ones that will have the biggest impact to the state. I can't answer the question, what are the top 3 things that ought to be done that would have the biggest impact to the state? What I can say, though, generically, is the most important thing here is sending a signal to business that we want you in our state. And I think right now we are sending the opposite. We're saying we love our state, we love our environment, that's our highest priority here, and if you come here, you're here because we're so great, and so you're going to pay whatever price. And I think we need to say it's a balanced approach. I'm not suggesting we swing all the way to, it's just jobs for jobs' sake. We need to say, what are the jobs we want? And go focus those industries and then get them here. Because there are those 3 to 4 times average Oregonian wage jobs out there. We need to get those here.
I don't disagree with what you're saying at all. My question, though, is you came from Intel specifically. What you might make some recommendations as to from your experiences in business.
Well, I guess I'm no longer an Intel employee, so I can no longer speak for the company, and nor would I even propose to speak for them. But again, the issues tend to be around land use. It's, you know, when we have a very strong land use policy in this state, and it's very rigid. And when we have someone like Applied who comes up and says, I want to create, you know, lots of these high-paying jobs, and we say, no, thank you, we don't have room for you. That, to me, is a very wrong message. We look at our cost of doing business. We just decided to raise electricity rates 50%. We went from being one of the most competitive electrical rates in the nation to one of the most expensive. And so if you run plants that use a lot of electricity, and semiconductor companies do, all of a sudden you went from being one of the most competitive to one of the least competitive. So there are those kinds of things, that the cost of business. Again, there are people within Intel that could give you a very explicit list, prioritized list, I'll tell you, on the things that could be changed that would make doing business here better. And I would strongly suggest you talk to them. The goal here is, again, in industry, we do benchmarking. So let's go out and talk to, you know, 30 or 40 companies who have had these experiences and understand them. And maybe in one particular incident, that caused an issue. And if that's a global issue or not, I don't know. Oregon is a great place. And, you know, we talk a lot about quality of life. And I know for most of us, quality of life, in my mind, is when I have a good job. And without a good job, I can't do anything. So the question is, do we have an environment that encourages the creation of jobs? And, you know, in Oregon, you know, permitting and creating buildings is a very difficult and challenging task. It can take, you know, 2 years to get something built. What one person considers a ditch, another person considers a wetland. And those things have huge impacts on how do we develop things. And so what's important to a semiconductor industry may be very different than what's important to, you know, an agriculture industry. So I would rather take the time to really go through and get the right people, interview them and get the top lists of issues that need to get solved. That way we can look at the ones that will have the biggest impact to the state. I can't answer the question, what are the top three things that ought to be done that would have the biggest impact to the state. What I can say, though, generically, is the most important thing here is sending a signal to business that we want you in our state. And I think right now we are sending the opposite. We're saying we love our state, we love our environment, that's our highest priority here, and if you come here, you know, you're here because we're so great, and so you're going to pay whatever price. And I think we need to say it's a balanced approach. I'm not suggesting we swing all the way to, you know, it's just jobs for job's sake. We need to say, what are the jobs we want? And go focus those industries and then get them here. Because there are those 3 to 4 times average Oregonian wage jobs out there. We need to get those here.
I don't disagree with what you're saying at all. My question, though, is you came from Intel specifically. What you might make some recommendations as to from your experiences in business.
Well, I guess I'm no longer an Intel employee, so I can no longer speak for the company, and nor would I even propose to speak for them. But again, the issues tend to be around land use. It's, you know, when we have a very strong land use policy in this state, and it's very rigid. And when we have someone like Applied who comes up and says, I want to create, you know, lots of these high-paying jobs, and we say, no, thank you, we don't have room for you. That, to me, is a very wrong message. We look at our cost of doing business. We just decided to raise electricity rates 50%. We went from being one of the most competitive electrical rates in the nation to one of the most expensive. And so if you run plants that use a lot of electricity, and semiconductor companies do, all of a sudden you went from being one of the most competitive to one of the least competitive. So there are those kinds of things that the cost of business. Again, there are people within Intel that could give you a very explicit list, prioritized list, I'll tell you, on things that could be changed and that would make doing business here better. And I would strongly suggest you talk to them.
Senator Massley, based on that and previous conversations, I think maybe Thursday morning would be a good time for the committee to hear from LCDC on land use planning. Might be a good idea just for us to address that issue specifically with that agency. That's what we've been talking about. Co-chairs about keeping that day open for that.
Senator Atkinson, yes. If I just make a suggestion, and my thinking's been really pushed by this a little bit. One of my law partners, a guy with a lot of gray hair that I've learned a lot from, is a gentleman by the name of Steve Schell. Steve was the first vice chair of the first LCDC ever set up. He was also one of the authors of Senate Bill 100. He also chairs for Mayor Katz the Growth Management Committee for the City of Portland. I've been having a lot of discussions with him, and at the right time, I'm not sure if this is a committee or whatnot, I think it would be good to hear from him because I think he's recognizing there is a things are a different place than they were when that thing was sort of drafted. And I think what he, is being one of the authors of that, he's not saying kick it out completely, but he's saying maybe we need to sort of rethink, because what he said is when that was first drafted, the growth was supposed to happen all over the state more so than what happened in the Portland metro area. And I think the political dynamics, because of the net job loss in the central city and the significant growth in Washington County, maybe is sending confusing politics. And I think it would be interesting to sort of get some folks in here that might give a thoughtful discussion of that. And I'm not sure this is a committee, but I think it gets to Jim's point, because the applied materials thing to me, hits me right here, because the difference between 33 and, there is not that large amount of parcel. There's probably two sites up now, given some of the layoffs up there. And so I think somehow we need to sort of figure out a process to sort of deal with that. And I think the state should be involved. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question was originally for Mr. Johnson, but I think Senator Messerly dealt with the question. And we have a person that just flew in this morning from out of state who will talk about the issue, his view that this is in fact the most unfriendly state for a business society, and that he has to operate in the lower 48. And hopefully we get him here to let us know what he has run into. But there's another question. I'm sitting here looking at a book that was mailed to us, I believe, last year, and it's called The Crisis in American State Budgets. And one of the things that they have in here is an analysis of what's happened to states in relationship to their tax policies over the last 10 years. What is interesting is that the states that lowered taxes the most, they had a 21.36% growth. But in states that raised taxes, they had an 8.59% growth. How do you view the tax burden? And I know we talked about regulatory burden. How about tax burden as far as any disincentive for a business to come to Oregon?
Well, I think the tax structure is extremely important. I think your data kind of speaks for itself. We live in a state where we will benefit if business is successful by having lots of employees that are being paid a lot and they pay a lot of income tax. And so we should be encouraging our businesses to grow here to drive our revenue stream up. It's got to be one of the most direct ways. And so I think it's quite clear.
Senator George, I guess just making a comment too, I think that's important. I think Jim's right on. If you can create an economic climate and tax policy is a part of that and basically increase the economic engine, that's important. But somebody that is probably going to spend the rest of his life here, I want to make sure that we have a revenue structure that lasts. And I think having been a student in this process for the last 20 years and looking not only what you guys are looking at special session and looking at what you're looking at next year, there's some big questions there. And I know, you've made a decision to approach a certain way during special session, but long term, I think we got to look at the entire structure to figure out something that will work, so we don't have to deal with this, particularly if we're trying to make the kind of investments that we're trying to make in higher ed.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Gentlemen, I said I would ask some specific things, so I'm going to ask three specific questions. Don't want to have you take a long time to answer, but just so we can narrow in the video. It made it clear the words were we are transitioning Oregon from agricultural society to a technology-driven society. And Jim, you pointed out that we have to, in these times, both cut and invest. So go in on that. I have three things. Number one is in the Oregon University system, they were considering in how we're going to cut and invest undergraduate programs, things like the agricultural station, and the investments that we're talking about in high tech. Are you saying that in the cut and invest that you would place these investments that the legislature has made in high tech over those ones in the agricultural system? Number two, you mentioned about AMAT and coming to Oregon because they want to be close to Intel. It's one of their biggest supplier. Part of the thing that we want to talk about in terms of stimulus is statewide stimulus so that Southern Oregon, Central and Eastern Oregon can also benefit in the Oregon economy. And yet there's obviously a strong driver in the technology society to aggregate intellectual capital, such as example by AMAT. So are we saying that it's going to be difficult to stimulate the economy in other parts of the state besides growing, say, in western Washington County? And then third, you mentioned Mr. Castles. We should consider some of the comments made in the Oregonian. And one of those was is that in order to invest wisely and also to reduce expenditures, we should consider combining the OSU and PSU efforts at engineering as one. I would like your response on those three issues.
Okay.
I'll let you decide.
First. Okay, first of all, in terms of, again, back to, my Michael Porter's comments, right? There's no such thing as a low-tech industry. Okay, so it's important for all of Oregon's industries to be investing in technology. So if we want to have farmers in Oregon, in the 21st century, we need to be investing in the technology to allow them to be competitive. If we want to have a paper system here, a paper industry here, and we want to have a wood products industry here, we have to be investing in the technologies. So you're asking a question, is it this or is it that? I say, we need a diverse economy. 10 years ago, forestry was the number one economic export. Today it's high tech. 10 years from now, 20 years from now, it could be bioscience. We need to continue to evolve our state economy and diversify. To say to get out of an industry is doesn't necessarily make sense in my mind. So what's the appropriate level of investment? We're talking about the fundamental here is investing in knowledge. And if we want industries to survive, we have to invest in them. So if you say if we as a state say we don't want to be in the agriculture business, then stop investing in the higher ed system around agriculture. But if you say no, agriculture is important to our state, then we need to continue to invest in it. So I think that you have to be investing in both. There's just no question in my mind, because we have a statewide environment in which different regions are going to excel in different things. And that kind of gets a little bit to the second question about diversification across the state. High-tech industries cluster. Semiconductor industries like to be next to semiconductor industries, and suppliers like to be next to customers. And so each region around this state is going to have to start developing its cluster. You're seeing that in Southern Oregon, where a lot of software industry is starting to build up. And you're starting to get the critical mass, where, again, because birds of a feather flock together. It's just the way it is. So the economic development is going to have to be, if we can create a seed, an idea, then we need to grow that. You're seeing in Bend, I don't know how it's happening, but there's a bioscience industry beginning to develop in Bend. That's something you definitely want to develop. You're seeing in Eastern Oregon, call centers are becoming a way of creating a foundation for a growth opportunity around it. So it's those clusters that are really critical. So I think from an economic development point of view, I think each area of the state is going to have to kind of get targeted about the kinds of jobs they're going to go after, and then create the entire ecosystem that it takes to support that industry there. And once you get it going, it's a great thing to have, but they're very, very hard to establish. So, and having a strong Portland metropolitan area economy is going to help fuel a lot of this, because that's what's going to start causing people to start diversifying geographically. Mm-hmm. And then the third one is a very, very controversial one that we have, you know, many, many different opinions on, and I'll let someone who I don't always agree with on the topic take the microphone.
Senator Metzger, just real quickly, instead of the technology economy, I think it's the knowledge economy. And to me, the way I look at it, if you look at the forestry industry, forest products, agriculture, I think pretty good if you look at Oregon State, some of the research coming out of there, there are ways you sort of can make this work a little bit. When I prioritize, I think you need to really sort of step up on this tier one thing. And you know, with all due respect to the State Board of Higher Ed and Don Van Leeuwenhoek, Mr. Van Leeuwenhoek comes from Pennsylvania, where actually, if you look at the paper today, they talked about the Milken Institute. If what we want to do is sort of create, you know, large manufacturing plants that sort of have a lot of production engineers, that kind of thing, 2X is the way to go. The vision I see for the state is I'd like to see a very healthy research and development economy, because that's where the new ideas are going to come from. And so we need to build a top-tier school of engineering. And I would say, I think the high-tech industry has promoted that because it benefits them. But I think if you really dig down, if we're talking about developing a biotech industry, and you guys heard about the intersection between biotech and engineering, we're talking about the next new thing, that's where we're going to get that from. And, you know, during session we talked about ORTDA. They produced over 100 startup companies up at University of Washington. Scott Gibson did the math. Given the size of research we have now, we should be producing 30 startup companies, and we're not. On the rural side, take 622. You've already got that deal cut. And then ask the next question. Once you got the pipe there, how are you going to build businesses around that? Pat Allen from the Oregon Economic Development raised that, and I think there's a project going on with SAO right now. But you know, you talk about the pilled amount of dollars we're sort of putting into that right now. That's really key. And then on the final point, Jim and I have had lots of discussions. I've hosted lots of things. Ultimately, if you're looking to do this, because unfortunately it doesn't get any better after you do special session, I think you do need to look at consolidation of the system. And I give John Castles credit for saying where he does, but if you can imagine something where you, I think John gets his ideas from University or the Montana system, but you take Oregon State and potentially merge Eastern and OIT with that, you potentially take Southern Oregon and merge that with University of Oregon. Ultimately, PSU needs to decide where they play in this, and I'm not saying that you actually would need to merge them into the system. It would be nice to sort of do that. Particularly my interest in the engineering space, because I don't think we've got the resources to sort of do both. And I think you also got to factor OGI, who's now part of Oregon Health Sciences University, in that equation. But you need a roadmap. And I'll tell you, if you got the roadmap, it's sort of like following this guy around. If you got focus, you can do some amazing things. And we got to get focus in this area. So Jim may want to sort of offer it.
Thank you. I think that
we're starting to run behind. Committee, and we've got a full agenda. Do you have?
I actually just have a thought, or more of a question that doesn't need an answer to this group. We've just danced around this issue of university reorganization, and John said it again in the paper this morning, and I just think this has been like a 35-year dance with no conclusion. And actually, last session, we just continued and took another step in the dance. And so I think it's would be really helpful. Don, you just kind of laid out at least some ideas on the table, and I think a special session is a very good time because we're having to make tough choices, and we're looking at bend and increasing the size of our system. And so this is a time that I think, in your opening comments, you said maybe we should talk about this in 2 years, but I really think this might be the appropriate time because it really is a values time for the state of Oregon and a strategic planning time for the state of Oregon of where we can and must invest. And I completely agree with you on engineering and tier one, that modest investment. If we back off of that, we're in a lot of trouble. But I think it's also the time, and I'd ask the New Economy Coalition to gather a plan and bring it. And even if it's something that we can just discuss and mull over, I think this is the right timing for that, and to put it off another 2 years just puts us behind the eight ball further.
Mr. Chair.
Maybe I'm sorry.
Maybe I'm under a little misapprehension here, but what I hear is a long-range program. I don't hear an economic stimulus at this point in time that would get things going. You know, we have, what is it, 95%+ small business in Oregon. I hear mostly these things geared toward larger businesses. If we've held up land out here for one big business to come in that wants to come in and put it in a certain place, and we said, now you can't have the land out there. What's this doing to all the small businesses that want to go places and that can't get there? Which is going to be the fastest to get a few small businesses going all the way around the state here that are basically here and could do some things? Or are you going to, you know, is our stimulus going to be strictly trying to still run for the long-range business that would, and the long-range plans that would probably come here if they had some reasonable aspect of being able to locate here reasonably and easily? And I would like to find out if, you know, we, when everybody's dancing around, you talk about dancing around, we're dancing around the land use issue of whether we're going to give somebody enough land to come in here and do anything, whether it be big business or small business. And nobody wants to change it. Everybody's saying, well, we got to do this, but we can't change any of the living conditions or anything else. I say that's a bunch of baloney. We got to sit down here and say, if we're going to have kids and we're going to continue to be a viable state, we got to elbow over a little bit and let somebody else have an opportunity. And are we going to get at that, or are we going to just sit here and shoot for stuff that's going to take us 15 years to develop? And I don't mean that that's bad, but I mean we're here right now to get rid of a recession, and hopefully we'll be picking up in the next 6 to 8 months. How do we jump start that?
I think our next person testify from small business. I think that's an excellent point. Our biggest employer is small business in Oregon.
And I don't mean that be anti-big business. I'm not at all. I like to see big business come in, but they have an opportunity to protect themselves a whole lot more than our little industries have an opportunity to protect themselves.
Sorry, Courtney.
The chair that I was gotten irritated, so I'm not going to really get. I'll just make a statement. I was hoping you'd say something positive. You went after land use issues. My fellow legislators have gone after regulations, the tax checks, and I expect that. I'm a public administrator. Actually, thought about being a city manager. I'm just curious to know. And you don't have to tell me, somebody, because I look at our agenda for the next 2 days, and I don't see anybody's going to talk about anything but the kind of things you talk about. I'm just curious, the little simple things like the quality of the fire services, police services, our libraries, our schools, and little parks and things like that. And I guess I'm going to take from your silence that you think we're okay in that area, because that does attract business and keep businesses. And I'm just, that's the basic infrastructure. I thought Senator Messerly, when he started there, was going to get to the basic, you got to have running water, you got to have the police and fire. So I don't want analysis. I just hope somebody in the next few days is going to tell us, how do we rank, how do we look when it comes to basic fire and police and little libraries and crazy 12? I was hoping to hear something from you. I knew I was going to hear about we got to do more in high tech and biotech and engineering and higher ed, but I couldn't get here this morning without those basic services. And I'd just like to know some certified smart person the next several hundred days, how are we doing there? Because I happen to feel strongly about those people. I'd like to know how we're doing. That's all. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I have another question, and maybe somebody will tell me that.
Well, Senator Cordy, I'm not irritated. I just, we've got a big agenda to get through today.
Cool.
I will say, though, a couple of things. And Senator Gordley's head was nodding on a point that I want to just reiterate. Two sessions ago, this body passed the entrepreneurial model for higher education, if you all recall that. And it essentially said to higher ed, you go out into the economy and ask what needs to be built, and then we'll build that kind of a student. And I will tell you that I don't know if you know this, but some of the highest paid undergraduate graduates from the university system are not in the universities that have been listed in these comments. It's actually at OIT. And OIT in Klamath Falls has grown a cluster of new businesses that have grown. Southern Oregon has grown a cluster of new small businesses that have grown. And the enrollment in the community college system is up 200%. So it's really, from the disconnect that I see that I want to have us talk about over the next few days is, how do we get those students to stay in Oregon to go to school in the first place when our tuition's so high,
And secondly, how do we get them employed? I mean, that's really the nuts and bolts of what we're doing, whether it's small business or big business or land use, or maybe we put them to work in some of the things that Senator Courtney just suggested. But I just wanted to make that point. If we thank you very much for coming today and for your comments, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
For coming. In an effort to keep going, we will now call up J.L. Wilson from the National Federation of Independent Businesses.
Mr. Chair, just a comment while they're coming up. As you talk about people coming in and they want to know about fire, and that didn't interest me at all. I came to Oregon, I was looking forward to having an opportunity to do business. We can iron out all those water problems and stuff like that when we get here, breeze our heads. The schools and all that stuff, the fire departments and all that stuff will follow if we've got a chance to do business.
Welcome. Co-Chairs Atkinson and Metzger, for the record, I'm J.L. Wilson. I represent the National Federation of Independent Business. Currently, our membership is just over 13,000 small employers here in Oregon. I appreciate the enormity of your task and the limited means with which you have to accomplish. I'll say right offhand, you do ask for suggestions. I will freely admit and apologize beforehand. Some of my suggestions will step on people's toes. It is.
You're refreshing.
I acknowledge that, and it's your job to weigh the merits of what I have to say, and I accept that. Also, I accept you'll probably get a fair amount of repetition because some problems tend to transcend industries and size classes and things like that. And I will touch on a few of the things that my predecessors set up here at the stand. The first thing by way of background is you do know that Oregon is a uniquely small business state. I have the stats in front of you, but 60% of our businesses employ fewer than 5 people, about 90% employ fewer than 20. As far as my membership, my average member has 4 employees and gross sales of $250,000 to $300,000. We're talking about your small Main Street Oregon business, and that's what I consider to be the broad foundation of Oregon business. We have the 4th highest rate of self-employment in the state. Our business starts in Oregon blow away the rest of the country. Regionally on the West Coast, our business starts, the incidence of is about 20% higher than anywhere else. We are a uniquely small business oriented state. I wanted to relay that to you. Skipping that, you know, even in the best of times, the thing I'd like to highlight is, yes, we're in a recession. Yes, times are hard. But yes, small business has always had to adapt to chaos and chaotic times. Even in the best of times, most small businesses don't make it. It tends to get highlighted here because we're in recession, but as my predecessor said, this is an opportunity. Recessions will end. Everybody understands that. It's an opportunity because most business starts actually occur when the economy is in recession. You think about it, you get laid off, you think, I don't want to work for somebody else anymore, I want to work for myself, and that lays the foundation of the business starts you see. So we have a whole foundation of business starts that's about to be laid, but we have an opportunity here to lay policy that will benefit them and help usher them into some prosperity. And to know how to attract and grow small business in Oregon, you really have to know what business views is important. Now, if you're an NFIB member, the one thing you get is a lot of surveys. You're asked your opinions on just about everything. And this survey is so big, we only do it once every 2 years. But Oregon businesses were asked by NFIB, what are the issues that are important to you? What are the impediments to business growth? What are the things and issues that you would like to see addressed? And I include that as an attachment for you on the third page. And this shouldn't be any surprise to anybody, but the impediments to business growth are 2 things, time and money. It all comes down to time and money because a business owner's retained earnings are the most important fuel for business growth, and a business owner's time is the most important asset that they have. And it's clearly reflected in the survey that I show. Now, what are the top 20 small business issues in Oregon? And then I'll run down and I'll give you some specific examples of how My membership feels on a particular issue. Now, this was taken about a year and a half ago. The next one, I believe, is due in the beginning of 2002. The cost of health insurance. Now, how does that play into recession or stimulus? Well, I think the Oregon has been complicit in this problem because, for one thing, there's no the insurance pool governing board, for one thing, has been something that's closed down to most Oregon businesses. What it was is a viable option for Oregon businesses to band together to purchase health insurance at lowest cost. Now, if you can buy the same product at lowest cost, you have more money to funnel into your business for growth and asset accumulation. I think that is a very positive step that can be made for economic stimulus, is reopening the insurance pool governing board for all comers to help small business purchase health insurance. Federal taxes on business income is not much that you have to deal with. Unreasonable government regulation. It's funny that land use was touched upon because I'm not going to gripe about it. I'll gripe about it lightly because it is an issue. You have the issue not only of siting businesses, which was mentioned beforehand, but you have the issue of making the cost of property, and you'll see that as number 19, the physical facilities cost, more expensive because you compact people and create demand for what is a limited supply, you raise costs of rent and the raise cost of your facilities that you have to do business, which obviously our Oregon members view as a very important issue to them and something that should be fixed. Locating qualified employees was one. Workers' compensation costs come in at number 5. Now, Oregon has had a very rich history in the past 10 or 12 years of reducing workers' comp costs, increasing benefits. But one area where I think that you could help employers is with the assessment cost that is tacked on to workers' comp. Not only do you pay the workers' comp policy, but in Oregon, what was just implemented is an 8% assessment, which was up from 7.3 just last year. I personally am not satisfied for the need or why you have to raise that tax 10% on employers on top of what they pay in workers' comp costs. So that is an issue that I forward to you as well. The workers' comp assessment cost that small employers have to pay on top of their workers' comp premiums that goes to the workers' comp department. State taxes on business income is number 6. Now that brings up an interesting issue because you may or may not know that the vast, vast majority of my members pay the personal income tax. They don't pay the 6.6% corporate tax rate. If they're an S corporation or LLC or anything else, they pay personal income taxes. Oregon's 9% rate does not stack favorably. You would like to see addressed, and I include that as your an attachment for you there on the third page. And this shouldn't be any surprise to anybody, but the impediments to business growth are two things, time and money. It all comes down to time and money because a business owner's retained earnings are the most important fuel for business growth, and a business owner's time is the most important asset that they have. And it's clearly reflected in the survey that I show. Now, what are the top 20 small business issues in Oregon? And then I'll run down and I'll give you some specific examples of how my membership feels on a particular issue. Now, this was taken about a year and a half ago. The next one, I believe, is due in the beginning of 2002. The cost of health insurance. Now, how does that play into recession or stimulus? Well, I think the Oregon has been complicit in this problem because, for one thing, there's no the insurance pool governing board, for one thing, has been something that's closed down to most Oregon businesses. What it was is a viable option for Oregon businesses to band together to purchase health insurance at lowest cost. Now, if you can buy the same product at lowest cost, you have more money to funnel into your business for growth and asset accumulation. I think that is a very positive step that can be made for economic stimulus, is reopening the insurance pool governing board for all comers to help small business purchase health insurance. Federal taxes on business income is not much that you have to deal with. Unreasonable government regulation. It's funny that land use was touched upon because I'm not going to gripe about it. I'll gripe about it lightly because it is an issue. You have the issue not only of siting businesses, which was mentioned beforehand, but you have the issue of making the cost of property, and you'll see that is number 19, the physical facilities cost, more expensive, because as you compact people and create demand for what is a limited supply, you raise the cost of rent and the raise cost of your facilities that you have to do business, which obviously our Oregon members view as a very important issue to them and something that should be fixed. Locating qualified employees was one. Workers' compensation costs coming at number 5. Now, Oregon has had a very rich history in the past 10 or 12 years of reducing workers' comp costs, increasing benefits. But one area where I think that you could help employers is with the assessment cost that is tacked on to workers' comp. Not only do you pay the workers' comp policy, but in Oregon, what was just implemented is an 8% assessment, which was up from 7.3 just last year. I personally am not satisfied for the need or why you have to raise that tax 10% on employers on top of what they pay in workers' comp costs. So that is an issue that I forward to you as well. The workers' comp assessment costs that small employers have to pay on top of their workers' comp premiums that goes to the workers' comp department. State taxes on business income is number 6. Now that brings up an interesting issue, because you may or may not know that the vast, vast majority of my members pay the personal income tax. They don't pay the 6.6% corporate tax rate. If they're an S corporation or LLC or anything else, they pay personal income taxes. Oregon's 9% rate does not stack favorably compared to most states. I look at my own LLC, and did you know that somebody who's self-employed, essentially, when you combine local taxes, state taxes, self-employment tax, and federal tax, if you're in the 28% tax bracket, which was middle of the road, you're paying a 40% marginal tax rate on your earnings as an LLC, 47%. Where do you expect the money to come from to reinvest back into your business? And Oregon with 9% is a big component of that 47%. And as I say, probably does not stack too favorably compared to most other states. In fact, I know it doesn't. Federal paperwork is an issue. Cash flow is an issue, which everything that I'm talking about relates to cash or time. State and local paperwork is an issue. Changes in tax laws and rules, cost and availability of liability insurance, dealing with tax agencies, controlling the time, keeping skilled employees, employment regulations, health regulations, cost of supplies and inventories, and so on and so forth. There are a couple issues that, and to address Senator Courtney's issue, you'll notice number 10 on the least important issues was crime in public safety, meaning that most people go into business or look at Oregon as they want to house the business environment, and crime doesn't factor too heavily into that equation of whether I'm going to start or whether I'm going to grow my business here in Oregon. A couple of issues specifically that I mentioned. The Insurance Pool Governing Board, a way for small businesses to purchase health insurance for less cost and funnel more money into their business. That's one thing. The workers' comp assessment, the 8% that's tacked on to your workers' comp premium that goes to the department, I really don't see any justification for why that had to be increased from 7.3 to 8% as it was this last year. Personal property tax, that's an issue that I've worked on, but as my predecessors here at the stand said, if you've got businesses that incorporate world-class technology and you say that that's what you need to grow and succeed, I've never quite understood why you would add an extra tax onto your own investment that you make to run your business, which is essentially what the personal property tax does. We made some headway in reducing that for very small and home-based businesses, but of course I'd like to see it expand, but like I said, like I told you, I admit that I am stepping on people's toes when I submit that idea to you. Another issue that wasn't on the top 20, but I would suspect is going to be on the top 20 issues when this poll comes around in 2 years, is the cost of electricity. And that was mentioned beforehand too. And recently it was said that the PUC could not reconsider the cost increase that just went into effect. Now that's 53% for commercial properties, and if you operate out of your home or anything else, that's 30%+. I can't tell you the number of calls I've received from my office to say that this is my number one problem, and it came right out of the blue. This is a major issue, and I just can't believe that it's something that the legislature couldn't intervene and say, in light of where our economy is, this has got to be something that we've got to scale down and address, because it's going to take a lot of people with it. And I hope that you get a sense of urgency from me, because it is that urgent, and the feedback that I get from my membership tells me that it's a very urgent issue. And so I would encourage you to look at ways that which you could intervene in that situation, because I don't know what's going to happen if somebody is faced with the prospect of a 53% increase in electric rates, where that was something that wasn't even anticipated just a short while ago. And I did touch on land use and how it impacts the cost of facilities and the cost of rent and things on top of that. Mr. Blackledge is going to come up. I kind of coordinated my testimony with him, so I don't want to steal any of his thunder, but we agree on a lot of things, and he represents the Governor's Small Business Council. But those are a few things that I throw your way. In terms of having an immediate impact, I think what we're experiencing now is the confluence of some major events that are really conspiring against business, and it's nobody's fault. But you, at the same time, where you have the workers' comp assessment increase, and you've got the electric rate increases, water rates are generally increasing, liability and health insurance are increasing. The costs of doing business are generally on a massive upswing right now, and those are the types of things that need to be addressed. And whether state government has any role, I suspect a small role, but by no means do I engage you to be a major player in a lot of these things. It's just a tough time right now all the way around. So I throw a couple of these things your way. I'm happy to elaborate or go further, but in the interest of time, I'm going to cut it short.
Thank you. I do know about the 47% LLC combined tax rate. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I do know of several LLCs who have laid people off in the last 90 days because they, frankly, can't afford to have them as employees. Questions for Senator George.
Really quick, Jill, thank you for your testimony. We had, I went through your top 13 list, and that was the top problems facing Oregon small business by actual response to the membership. And I find it kind of interesting that 11 out of the 13 are directly related to government action or inaction. And hopefully you'll be willing to take a little bit of heat, stand up and say, gee, you know, each one of these points we need to do something about. Something has been mentioned is the cost of fuel in this state. There's a lot of places in this nation where you can buy gasoline in the low 90s or even high 80s, and yet we're looking at gasoline prices, diesel prices that are still in the low dollar 30s. So hopefully you'll supply us with information. As you saw, we extended the period of time for comment and would be happy to assemble those and deliver them. And I'm sure this committee would be willing to do that.
Thank you, Chair Atkinson. Senator George, there's no question. And like I'd like to reiterate, time and money is really what it all comes down to. And the proof is in the pudding. I mean, this is, we ask all 13,000 of our members what they deem important. And it all, has always come down to time and money, and that's just the simple fact of doing business.
Good question.
How do we roll back the the increase in electric rates?
We'll talk about that tomorrow.
Make some common sense out of environmental law.
I'm just curious, since you recommend, you said that, I was wondering how would you. This is a very comprehensive list. It's very enlightening. I was curious, since you did bring that up, you predict it's going to come up in 2 years. The legislature could do something. I'm just curious to know how you...
Chair Atkinson, Senator Courtney, I don't know the specifics. I brought it up just because it's kind of germinating in my mind.
Okay.
Right now. But I just could not believe that the legislature would be helpless in the situation, and that's the viewpoint from which I can.
Senator Courtney, tomorrow we'll hear more from businesses large and small that we're going to focus specifically on the impact, economic impact of the energy costs. So maybe we'll get into that tomorrow.
Senator Decker, thank you, Chair. Just on that point, one question that I would have for you, JL, on electricity costs, because I think I agree we're largely limited on what we can do as a state in terms of other than creating climate. One thing we might be able to do, and I would be interested how that would affect your membership, is provide, since it's cyclical, the thought pattern is that the costs are high for electricity now. They're thought to come down, and all projections that they will come down later in the spring and early summer. Is if the state could creatively provide just a cash flow help with businesses to provide some funds now to make it through this period, if that would help with job retention and help with investment, if we provided funds to get through this tough period, in the know that the state would be remunerated when the costs come back down in April, June, July.
Senator Atkinson and Senator Deckard, I'm proud to say I represent a proud bunch, and I'm not sure that that would pass muster with them, quite honestly. I'm not sure that they would want to feel beholden to the state for any reason, and that's just kind of the reality of it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really question sometimes, and this will lay into what we're hearing here from Mr. Wilson. Last week I was at a briefing with Bonneville Power Administration, and the question, this is from all the western states, and the question came up of what is the cost of fish recovery and the habitat recovery? And we had difficulty getting an answer from them, but since then, I'm trying to tie this figure down, but the figure has been mentioned to me that it could be as high as $7 a month for the normal household, or an average household. Well, if you parlay that into what it was costing industry, I think it is a significant factor. And I guess it's one thing that we have that kind of an expenditure, kind of a cost factor, but when we can't identify the value, if there is a value to that, or how much that value is, I think it's time that we take a very, very hard look at issues such as mitigation, such as what we're doing with our salmon resources and how we're dealing with the situation and what is beneficial and what is cost effective and all those things. When you look at what's happened to the economy of rural Oregon, you have to look at the cost of this regulatory atmosphere that we're into. So that gets right back to the cost of our energy very directly.
Mr. Wilson, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Thank you. And this is not a question for Mr. Wilson, although I do appreciate your comments very much. This focus on small business and getting the small business perspective from Mr. Wilson just makes me ever more mindful of how we need to make sure that in our process of hearings over the next couple of days that we don't miss a rich opportunity. And that is to be sure to hear a perspective from minority and women-owned businesses in this state. And there are organizations who can bring that perspective to us. And perhaps I'm a bit remiss in not being more aggressive prior to our meetings to say, and let's put this on the agenda as well. But for example, there's the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs. There's a lot of exciting, a lot of vibrant activity happening with minority businesses in this state. And again, given the way our agenda is lined up over the next couple of days, I'm just afraid we're going to miss that story. And I don't want us to miss that story. I know the Oregon Progress Board is going to touch on some of the issues that I'm really concerned about. But again, I don't want us to miss that perspective. And it didn't quite come through in Mr. Wilson's presentation. And again, that's not a criticism of you at all. But again, there's this real vital business activity going on in our state. And I just don't want us to miss hearing about it.
Very good point.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fisher.
Yeah, I apologize for looking through the newspaper here, but I just heard on the radio this morning about BPA's increase regarding Senator Messer's comments on electrical prices. How in the world that they're going to increase spending 46% on salmon recovery here in the next 2 years? Are you looking at any decrease in the cost of electricity? That's what I'm talking about, and that's right directly at the bottom of the whole thing. When in 1993, when we had a Western Legislative Forestry Task Force over in Idaho, already Idaho Power was laying 15% of their bill to household consumers and commercial customers. 15% of their monthly bill in 1993 was due to the environmental garbage that they were facing back at that time, let alone what's happened since that time. I think $7 is a ridiculously low fee. It's probably more like 50 to 60% of the average bill right now that could be traced right back to
bunch of things that would be pretty hard to mend down along when they're environmentally that sound.
Any other comments? I will say, Senator Fisher, I hope that the amount of money that I spend for steelhead fishing, I wish I could get it down to $7 a fish.
$700.
Next, we'll call up the Governor's Small Business Council, Eric Blacklege. Thank you very much for coming.
Co-chairs, members of the committee,
good morning. For the record, my name is Eric Blacklege, Chair of the Governor's Small Business Council. I very much appreciate the opportunity to present comments to the committee on the state's current economic budget and budget problems and our options for stimulating economic growth and employment opportunities. As I think the committee knows, small businesses are the base of Oregon's economy. Based on the most recent information available from the U.S. Small Business Administration, Oregon had 278,000 small businesses in 1998, including 180,000 self-employed individuals. Small businesses made up over 97% of all Oregon businesses that have employees and provide over 733,000 jobs in that year, which is almost 60% of all state employment. Even more importantly, small businesses both in Oregon and nationally were responsible for the vast majority of all net new job growth in the last few years. Many of the state's largest current employers were originally Oregon small businesses, even companies like Intel and Tektronix. And some of today's small businesses may potentially become the economic leaders of the future. I might mention in regard to Senator Boydley's comments, too, that minority and women-owned businesses are the fastest growing segment of this small business community, not only in Oregon, but also nationally. And also, unfortunately, will potentially probably be one of the most threatened by this recession, since so many of them are newer businesses. Over the last 2 years, the Governor's Small Business Council has researched the problems and needs of Oregon's small businesses and the nature of the state's various programs to assist them. I'd like to offer some recommendations based on that research. Unfortunately, I can't suggest an easy way for you to stimulate Oregon's economic and job growth in the short term, because even if you had the will, you simply don't have the resources. Last week I was in Washington, D.C., working with House and Senate tax committees trying to deal with the federal stimulus package, and even that doesn't have the potential to have a major impact on the depth of this recession. This recession is international in scope, and it will take an international effort and some time for the world's economy to correct itself. What I will recommend is some longer-term changes that will help reduce the recession's damage to Oregon's economic base and help increase the rate and the quality of future economic growth. State government impacts Oregon's economy in three major areas: regulatory policy, which we've heard a little bit about already, tax policy, and state service programs that promote business or workforce development. Before looking at these areas, I want to make sure, though, that everyone understands that there are two major categories of businesses and that they react somewhat differently to these factors. The differences are not dependent upon size, but rather on whether or not they provide primary or secondary business services. A primary business produces a product or service which is exportable outside the Oregon economy to other states or countries. Typically, they are a manufacturer of a product or a processor of a raw material that is grown or extracted in the state. They may also be a provider of exportable professional services such as consulting, software development, or even higher education services. Our universities are actually a primary employer because they draw in students from outside the state whose money is spent in the state of Oregon and recycled here. Attracting or growing these businesses is critical to the Oregon economy because they bring in new revenue from outside the state, and their economic impact is also multiplied about three times in secondary economic growth. In Oregon, most of these primary sector businesses are small businesses and farms. Many of them serve their local communities in many other ways also. Because they serve a broad market, their competition may be national or international, and their potential for success and business growth depends upon having a tax, regulatory, and business cost environment at the state of Oregon.
Thank you. We've got your written comments. I think we can maybe get right to the recommendations and have a conversation about those. That's where we... These are very well written.
Specific recommendations.
Mr. Chair, could I ask a question here? As you were speaking, I was browsing through your summaries here, and I would be very interested if you could comment on those recommendations which could be dealt with by the director's direction or the governor's executive order, those that would require an administrative rule change, and those that would require a legislative movement. Because I think what I'm interested in is what could be handled by the direction of the governor or the director of the department and what could be changed in a relatively short time by administrative rule?
That question I would probably leave up to the governor's office and also up to various state agencies that would deal with some of those administrative rules. But I was suggesting in my testimony that there needs to be a change overall in the state's regulatory climate. Many state agencies now have a fairly positive, helpful orientation towards supporting business development in the state. But the nature and the type of state regulations should start with the legislature, because the legislature sets state policy in terms of state regulatory policy. It is then implemented by the various agencies, and sometimes that implementation, I think, does go beyond the intent of the legislature in terms of the nature of that implementation. But most of the issues are still issues that I think probably come back to the legislature, where the legislature can have some impact. For example, one issue that was raised in the last testimony was the question of the PUC's rate increase for PGE. I make some recommendations in here that one of the things that needs to be looked at there, I believe, is what is the nature of the state's current rate-making policy? Because I believe included in that rate increase is a great deal of speculative value that occurred when Enron purchased PGE in the first place. It was not simply the true cash value of the assets, the poles, the wires of PGE when it was purchased by Enron, and that's what really makes a difference, for the difference to the ratepayers. State policy can determine how those rates are made by the PUC. And I think the PUC should only consider in its rate making the actual business assets that are either purchased or added to by a new purchaser that really have some impact on the services provided to ratepayers, not on any speculative value that they may have caused them to buy a business simply for the eventual return to their own stockholders. The other specific recommendations for improvement include make Oregon regulations in compliance and reporting processes similar to the federal government or other nearby states whenever possible to allow easier record keeping and possibly combined reporting. For example, payroll regulations and reporting are the single largest area of regulatory burden. By adopting the federal harmonized wage code for reporting wage amounts, which would require only very minor changes to Oregon's definitions, Oregon employers could participate in the IRS combined electronic payroll and tax reporting program, which would reduce reporting cost burdens on Oregon employers. We could adopt an Oregon regulatory fairness program similar to the federal government and other states to require better analysis by state agencies of the potential cost impact of new regulations on small businesses and on all businesses for that matter. It should also require agencies to make all state regulations and adopted national regulations and codes available to businesses and provide compliance assistance, as some agencies now do, particularly for small businesses that lack the resources to hire their own specialized compliance staffs. Yeah. We can assure that state purchasing regulations provide full opportunities for local Oregon businesses to compete for state contract purchasing, so state tax dollars will benefit Oregon's economy and taxpaying businesses, not some out-of-state suppliers. We can discourage unusual or specialized local and regional taxes on businesses which have high compliance costs in relation to the amount of taxes collected, such as payroll taxes based on special district taxes that require complex payroll tracking systems of where employees work. It adds a great deal of burden to small businesses, yet generates relatively little overall tax revenue for the special taxing districts. We could discourage cities and counties from misusing the state's land use planning system to erect unreasonably high development cost barriers or unnecessary regulations that restrict business development. We could use the state's regulatory powers to also help improve the business climate, for example, in the situation of the PUC rate increase, by setting standards that apply to state regulatory decisions which make it fairer for the business community and create a better economic climate. In terms of tax policy, and I realize that there is a separate Senate committee looking at tax policy issues, but you also need to look at the broader balance of tax of state and local taxes, since they are a key factor in stimulating and maintaining economic growth. You also probably don't want to hear about potential tax reductions at a time when the state budget is so tight. The current problem should remind us of how dependent Oregon's revenues are on the health of the economy. Many business decisions are influenced by tax considerations, including investments in new facilities and equipment, or even the key decision as to where to locate a business itself. Both personal and corporate income taxes, as was pointed out, are important because most small businesses do pay taxes at individual rates from pass-through partnerships or as corporation income, as well as from self-employment income. The personal tax impact on business owners or key executives also often determines where the business gets located or where the proceeds from the sale of a successful business get reinvested. specific recommendations in terms of tax policy improvements would include, don't increase the overall tax and fee burden. On a per capita basis, the 1997 U.S. Census Bureau data shows that Oregon state and local governments raised about $7,000 per person in taxes and fees, which was eighth highest in the nation at that time. I don't believe it's probably reduced significantly from that point, even though only 36.5% of those were technically from what was called tax revenue. So you need to be very careful to look at the overall cost burden on businesses and on individuals in the state, not just technically at the state tax level.
Mr. Rogers, you heard the testimony from JL about
yes.
the tax burden on S-Corp.
That's correct. Single pass-through is taxed at personal rates, and obviously those personal rates are very high in Oregon.
So you, one of your recommendations to this committee is to understand, for instance, in Oregon, we have the ability to have single-member LLCs. Mm-hmm. Single-member LLC has the potential of being taxed at almost 50%.
That is correct. And I think we need to look at our tax situation, our tax system, in terms of that issue, because it obviously tends to discourage people from using that particular form of business association. We also provide a reduced capital gains tax rate and broader rollover deferral for a qualified reinvestment in Oregon small businesses. Most small businesses don't have large tax-favored 401k retirement accounts, because most businesses put most of their retirement assets into their business, which Oregon still taxes at the full maximum rate when they sell it. This is a major reason why successful entrepreneurs often move to the state of Washington or other states with low personal income tax rates when they're ready to sell one business and invest in another. And as a result, Oregon misses that reinvestment from that business transition.
So how many people would you say live in Vancouver?
Quite a few that I know personally who sold businesses in Oregon, very successful businesses, and now their business dealings are all done in the state of Washington, and Oregon misses a lot of the potential from that reinvestment. We'd also phase out, as was mentioned by JL, the personal property tax, which specifically targets businesses which have made a heavy investment in new business and technology equipment to become more competitive. Real property taxes provide a reasonable revenue contribution in relation to a business's impact on local government. And by taxing personal property, we often go at the very tools that businesses need to be successful and compete in today's environment.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator George.
We're a small processing, farm-based processing outfit. If we had to pay personal property taxes, I tell you right now, we'd be out of business, and we had one of the greatest years as far as volume. But the cost of energy, 53% increase, and all the rest of the stuff has added a burden that we can't sustain. We're looking at making some investment in equipment. I would not make that investment if, in fact, I was paying that tax. Now, that means that every other business that is paying it has to be coming to the same conclusion I am. That means jobs aren't being generated.
That's very true, and it's also a tax which is very difficult for counties to collect. It requires a great deal of administrative expense, so it's a very inefficient tax. But it is a tax which very specifically targets that kind of reinvestment, and as a result is very contrary to good tax policy, particularly in times of recessions. We'd also maintain an increased exemption for federal taxes and expand it even more when possible to reduce the significant effective tax rate on higher income individuals who are in effect paying a tax on a tax because of their inability to deduct more than the $3,000 or $5,000 of federal taxes. We could also maintain a well-balanced, nationally competitive tax and fee level, which attracts new residents who will contribute to the state's economic growth. It's important to remember that the balance between taxes paid and state expenditure benefits received by residents who can have a significant impact on the types of individuals who choose to live in or come to Oregon, and also on the sustainability of the state's economy and governmental budgets. Our much-touted quality of life, which was mentioned earlier, and a highly progressive tax structure could attract large numbers of retired people or underskilled young people who would put more of a burden on public services than they might contribute in taxes, making sustainability of state government very difficult. Although this is the worst time to fund it, the state of Oregon, like any reasonable business individual or organization, also needs a reserve fund to give it countercyclical funds to maintain or ideally expand key state budget programs during short-term recessions like this year. The current budget problem should remind us that recessions will still occur and that our state budgeting and tax rebate policy often increases the negative impact on the state because of the lack of a stability fund. The upcoming special session might still be a good time to initiate such a fund, since any money reduced